Let's do that hockey.
Welcome to Dauber Prospect Report, a member of the Hockey Podcast Network. This is report number 48. I'm Victor Nuno, one of the co-hosts here, and with me is Peter Harling. How are you, Pete?
I'm awesome, buddy. It's another good time of the year, right? You've got hockey season is kind of starting to slow down a little bit. We got some teams in playoffs or leagues in playoffs, leagues getting into playoffs. You got a trade deadline coming up. The Oscars are next weekend or this weekend, whenever you're listening to the podcast. Are you into movies? Are you a movie guy?
Yeah, I like movies. I don't usually pay too much attention to the Oscar nominees, but it is kind of a nice list. I mean, in general, those are decent movies. So if you're like, what should I watch? Those are probably ones you should catch, although sometimes I don't always agree with the selection, right?
Yeah, we're going to have a family event. We're going to have an Oscar party here and have the whole, all the kids and whatnot over. So I'm trying to get caught up on my Oscar movies, watching as many as I can before Sunday. And I watched American Fiction recently. I messaged you that you have a striking resemblance to Jeffrey Wright, which I think is a compliment. He's an awesome actor.
Yeah, I'll take that all day. I also thought he did an amazing job in that movie. I think his complexion is maybe slightly darker, but it depends on what light you see me in. But I'll take it. He's a good looking, talented guy. But yeah, I also really enjoyed that movie. I thought it was phenomenal.
Yeah, very clever, pretty funny, and very well done. Well, back to hockey though, right?
Yeah, this is, as you said, fun time of the year. I'm in playoffs in most of my leagues. The Dauber Prospects League we're in together, I think, still has like three more matchups. I was like kind of surprised by that. But some are not. Some have a little bit of time, but there's lots of news out. And one of the biggest things is the free agent list. And that's what we're going to talk about today. There's some free agents. Some of them have been signed, some might not. And a lot of leagues that I'm in, you have to be associated with an NHL team in order to be put on your roster. So that's kind of what we're going to give you some preview about is the plan. Hey, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. All the leagues I'm in, actually one of them is a little different, where you have to have a guy who's either drafted or signed a contract. So these are guys who are undrafted and prospects coming from the CHL or NCAA or Europe. And I always love these guys. And you know, it's free money when you can get them, and it very often doesn't pan out. It turns into a whole lot of nothing. But every once in a while, you can really hit a home run with one of these guys and get someone who's an impact fantasy player. So I always try and do my homework and look like a genius for signing some of these guys. So hopefully we can help you look smart in your league too.
No, you're right. There are actually a couple guys who were drafted, but their rights expired. So that could happen too if you don't sign the player before a certain amount of time. But yeah, in general, I think as a general caveat, we can say none of these guys, certainly in a shallow dynasty, are going to be must-add guys. They're all going to be, for deep leagues, have varying levels of interest. And some of them could be quite good, and some could be just nothing. So keep that all in mind. But we're going to do our best to bring some attention to these unheralded guys. And before we start, this reminder, this episode is brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network and DraftKings. Follow at HockeyPodNet for more great hockey podcast. You can use DraftKings promo code THPN for listening to the show. We're on that in a bit. And we are also proudly sponsored by Fantrax, the ultimate league manager for any dynasty sport you play. It's completely customizable for however you want to set up your league, from scoring categories, an amazing draft room to host the draft, draft pick trading, and a treasury option, plus so much more. Use our promo code to sign up for the league using the link fantrax.com/DPR show. All right. I think we're going to go back and forth here, Pete, and I believe I have the first guy. So I'll go ahead and talk about him first. And this is Colin Graf. Colin Graf, who is a 21-year-old right-wing center. He plays for the defending national champion, Quinnipiac. I forget what their mascot is, but he was a really big part of that team last year. He was not ever drafted. And I actually wrote an EP Rinkstar article about him. So if you want to get a deeper dive on Colin Graf, he is one that I wrote about. And it's a little bit interesting about him because he's not small. I think a lot of the guys we're going to talk about, the questions come up, why did he not get drafted? For a lot of them, the reason is they're small, and that makes sense. But Colin Graf is 6'1", 194 pounds. sometimes they're slow or have skating issues. That's not really the case for him either. He skates pretty well. Maybe they don't have certain skills. Well, he's a really good shot and a really good puck handler. The question is maybe why the heck did this guy not get drafted? And, you know, part of the reason might be that he played in the NCDC during the 2020-21 season and then played for Union College and was pretty decent, but didn't, you know, jump off the page. And so he could have been drafted as an overager. And then last season, when he absolutely blew up 59 points in 41 games, it sounds like he had multiple offers to sign and some teams were interested in him, but he decided he wanted to return to Quinnipiac for another season as a to go at another run of a national championship. And I think also last season he was viewed as an interesting player. This season, he's looked at kind of like the player to get in terms of for certain rankings. They call him, The Athletic has him as the top player to be signed, and he's the only one in their list that's projected to be a middle of the lineup player. All the rest are either, you know, bottom six, maybe play some games. So Colin Graf really is the bell of the ball this year, whereas last year he might have, you know, had a little less say in where he could go and a little less influence about all that. So I think that plays into it too. But he is a really competitive guy, and you know, he's got some pretty good skills, but none of his shots are elite and none of his skills are elite. And I think that for the most part, you could say that he is getting a little bit boosted by being on a really good team. Quinnipiac is a really good team, and I think that helps him because they're winning a lot and scoring a lot. In the PNHLE model, he's been looking that last year and this year like a first line potential. Again, I don't know that he hits first line, but middle six is certainly reasonable based on what he's doing. And I pulled up my Fantasy Hockey Life player card. It looks really good for Colin Graf. I mean, the goals, assists, the shots, all of that is looking like top of the league for the NCAA that he's in. He doesn't hit or block a ton, but he has a pretty decent peripheral floor because those are closer to average where his shots are really high. So overall, you have a pretty high floor guy, someone who's going to be sought after. He's probably going to be able to choose the team he plays for, and that's going to help because I'm sure he's going to choose a team that is going to say, yeah, we'll put you in our middle six or we'll put you in our top six or whatever. And so you kind of like that for Colin Graf. So pay attention to who he signs with, and you probably want to jump on that. Don't you think, Pete?
Yeah, so you're saying that he's the best of the bunch, and I think I agree with that. And now let's try to contextualize that. Last year, the best of the bunch player was Jake Livingston, and his first year in pro has really not materialized into anything. The year before that, I would say it was probably Ben Myers, and he's not made it either. He's struggling as well. I think there's probably some comparisons between Graf and Myers. You know, Ben Myers played for University of Minnesota. He was the captain there of the Golden Gophers. So, you know, he played on a good team. He took them deep into the Final Four. And I think he was a Hobey Baker finalist. I don't think he won, though. I can't remember. You know, there's some comparisons there. So you might want to get excited about Colin Graf because, like you said, he's the best player on the list that we're going to talk about today. But that doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be the next Paul Kariya. He does have, you know, decent size. He's 6'1", 174, and he's only 21 years old. And I'll probably sound like a broken record, but a reoccurring theme through today's episode is going to be how the turnaround time on these guys is going to be pretty instant, right? Like if you've signed Ben Myers when he was a free agent in your fantasy league, and you know, he had a cup of coffee at the end of the season and looked great, and then the last year and then this year he's been almost entirely in the American Hockey League and he's doing well, but he's like 24 years old now or whatever it is. So, you know, the ship has kind of left the port and it's going to be a miracle leap for him to get on it before it's out of sight. So Colin Graf is 21 years old, as he mentioned. So you've got a couple of years here where if he signs at the end of the season with, let's say, the Islanders, which would be a great destination for him, he'll have a cup of coffee at the end of the season, very likely with the Islanders. I don't think they're a playoff contender, so they might as well see how he plays at the NHL level. And then you're looking at basically one more season to see if he can come back and stick with the team full season from the start of the year, or at least finish with the team by the end of the year. And then after that, if the answer is nope, didn't make it, then you know you only wasted a year and and a free agent signing or a waiver claim, perhaps. So not really high stakes here, right? And you don't have to sit him on your prospect bench for 5 years to find out it's not going to pan out. So that'll be a good thing going through the whole list, right?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think the wait time is nil. And as you mentioned, long road ahead. I do think, though, that Graf is a little bit better than those last two you mentioned. It's hard to compare the situations, but you're right. It is generally an uphill battle. But I do think watching him, he's a little bit more dynamic and interesting than Livingston and Ben Myers. And by the way, you mentioned one of them might have won the Hobie. No, neither of them did.
Nah, I didn't think. He was definitely nominated for it, but I didn't think he won. I didn't want to sell short, though. That'd be mean. All right, so let's move on to one of my guys. And this is a bit of a double dip because we talked about him on a previous episode after I watched the London Knights in Ottawa, and I had a live viewing, and we had a list of players who I was planning on watching. And Samuel Meyer was not one of the guys on our list of players to talk about, but I managed to sneak him in regardless at the end of the show because he was pretty impressive from what I saw. So just to kind of to recap on that, he's a 20-year-old playing in the OHL. So he's overage. He played most of his career with the Petes. And now he's been traded to Ottawa 67s as the Petes are on a rebuild. And Ottawa is trying to make a run in the playoffs. And I think he's a real prominent candidate for a contract because he has NHL-ready size. He's 6'3", 207 pounds, and 20 years old. And he plays a nice pro-style game. Like, he looks like a professional hockey player in the OHL when he's out there on the ice. You know, he's a very commanding presence. He's very calculated in his decisions and the plays that he makes. He's physically mature. He's able to exert his will physically on players and the play. He's never drafted, of course, which is why he's on this episode, but he does have some NHL rookie camp experience as he's been invited to a few, including the Sharks camp, I think it was last summer. And, you know, he's got some big game experience taking Peterborough to the Memorial Cup last year. So a deep playoff run with the Petes and then, you know, 4 or 5 games at the Memorial Cup. And he looked great there, too. He's getting primetime minutes in Ottawa. Like, him and Henry Muse are getting all the minutes that they can handle. And he's looking really fantastic with all the opportunity that he's getting there. And so that'll give him an opportunity to hopefully have another deep playoff run with the 67s this time around and make a bit more of a name for himself with the scouting community. So this is a player who I think has good two-way potential as a defenseman. His fantasy value in points only league might not really move the needle for you, but he's the kind of guy that if he makes it, I can see him being a player that gets a lot of ice, right? He can take defensive zone draws. He could play on either side of the special teams scenarios, probably not first unit power play ever in his career, but he's not a liability offensively. There were some opportunities that, you know, he just kind of whiffed on at the game I was at. I mentioned that on the last episode. So he might lack a little bit of finishing panache, but that was just one game. And he has the hockey sense to make himself available, to jump up and be in the play and have that opportunity, right? So maybe he finishes more often than not. His points totals this season are pretty decent. So Samuel Meyer, Mayer, if you want to look him up and maybe put him on your watch list. What's your thoughts on Meyer again, Victor?
Yeah, as you mentioned, having NHL size is really important, and the mobility, all of that's going to be super important. I was looking at his player card from Mitch Brown, and it is bad. His defense and transition game is really, really poor. So that might be an issue that, like I said, I haven't really watched him. I don't know that much, but looking at just what Mitch has tracked, it sounds like the mobility and the puck moving on the transition game might be a bit of an issue, even though the expected goals and the primary assists look good. The offense looks good. Yeah, like you mentioned, that might not translate. And if he's there to provide transition and defensive play, I don't know that that's really going to fly for him. That seems to be a struggle already in the OHL, at least according to that data. Looking at my player card from Fantasy Hockey Life, Samuel Meyer has really good shots and really good hits, and his blocks aren't too bad. So there's a strong peripheral floor there if he does make it. So that's something to keep in mind.
Right. Well, size and mobility are on vogue again in the NHL for defensemen. And he's got both of those things. So there could be something there. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Alex Pietrangelo, but, you know, he could play.
I'm concerned with what I see on this player card, but I didn't watch him live. So I will reserve further judgment. But yeah, definitely someone interesting to think about. And let's move on to the next guy, and that is Trevor Wong. Trevor Wong is has, depending on, you know, so different guides, you know, rate players differently, but on the EP guide, who was just rating CHL free agents, Trevor Wong was the third best available free agent. So that's pretty nice. And, you know, there's a clear reason why Trevor Wong was never drafted, and that's because he's small. He's 5'9", 159 pounds, and he plays for the Saskatoon Blades. He's actually their captain this year. He's played for them the last three seasons. He was drafted by Kelowna, and then he was moved a few seasons ago. 90 points in 60 games so far this season. That's pretty awesome. He had a similar production last season. His first two WHL seasons, he didn't score too much. Reading what my EP ringside colleagues had to say about Wong, I think one of the things that keeps coming up is that he has elite playmaking and passing skills, that he is a really smart and creative player. So unlike a lot of, you know, smaller players that sometimes are just speedy or kind of, you know, peripheral plays, he makes some strong inside plays and he gets the puck to the dangerous zones. Some of his tracking data via Mitch's card is pretty elite, actually, when you look at it, like his plays to the middle, board advantages or board plays to the middle, advantages created, off puck assists. All of these are like elite for Trevor Wong. What isn't good for him is, aside from the size, is his goal scoring. So both his shots and expected goals are low, but his primary assists, there's literally no one better in the CHL in expected primary assists than Trevor Wong, which is really impressive when you think about all the great players that are in the CHL right now. And this is according to Mitch's data, of course. So guys that he's ahead of, guys like Gavin McKenna, Luke Misa, Quinton Musty, you know, think of some of the best players that are having some of the best seasons in the CHL right now. He's better than them right now. So that's pretty awesome. And, you know, will he make it? It's kind of hard to say. I was looking at the the hockey prospecting card, and Trevor Wong actually had some pretty good equivalency in his original draft season. He is a 13%er. I'm sure they passed on him because he was 5'8 at the time, and he's only grown an inch since then. He kind of kept up that scoring until he kind of trended down a little bit. Now he's at 4% chance of being a star. So I was looking at the comps for him, and lo and behold, there was a Jonathan Chichu comparison there. So I guess all he needs, Trevor Wong, is to have a Hall of Fame, you know, center like Joe Thornton next to him, and maybe he can score 50 goals. No, probably not, because he's not a goal scorer. He's a passer. But I thought that was kind of interesting. And I was looking at the Fantasy Hockey Life card. His primary assist per 60, as we mentioned, off the charts. His points off the charts. But pretty much everything else for Trevor Wong is pretty low in terms of goals, hits, shots, blocks. All of that is pretty low. So you are banking on with Trevor Wong in fantasy that he is going to set up other people. And that is it. There really isn't a whole lot more that he's probably going to provide if he can't translate that to the next level. So it's a bit of a one trick pony, but that one trick is really, really good right now, at least in the CHL. Pete, do you have any interest in Trevor Wong?
Not really. I mean, the size is a huge factor for me, and I know that you can overcome that. And I haven't seen him play live, so I don't know if he plays small or if, you know, he's a little bit of a fire hydrant kind of guy, but it's a big challenge for him. And not being able to score goals is a concern too. I'd like to see that a little bit more balanced. I know maybe if you play him with a guy like Cole Iserman, you get a bit of Hall & Oates kind of chemistry magic going on there, where you got the super duper playmaker with the lethal shot and goal score. There's a fun, Wong reminds me, there's a guy that played for the Frontenacs, Nick Wong, and he played on a line with Shane Wright and Zaid Wisdom for a while. And I always loved it when they said the goal was Wisdom from right and wrong.
That's awesome.
It was. All right. Anything else on Wong? I don't really have much input on him.
The only thing I was going to say is that his player card does not look like someone who was not drafted. Like, his player card from Mitch looks like that's what superstars, like first round draft picks, look like. And that's impressive. So yeah, I mean, he's small, but he does a lot of little things that Mitch tracks that looks really, really good. And if there's one thing I know about Mitch, he is really good at finding these diamonds in the rough. Like Rodwin Dionicio, he was banging the table for him last fall and he slid to the fifth round and he's like, this guy's going to be good. And while we still don't know that, he has looked really good since and is trending to be a player. And he's picked a lot of these guys out over the years. So I wouldn't be surprised if he at least made it on some rosters and, you know, in the right situation with, you know, with a playmaker like Wong, and if he gets paired with a, you know, goal scorer and some other people that can maybe help him drive the line, he could be decent. So a lot of ifs and coulds, but I'm impressed by that player card.
Well, it'd be nice to see him at least get a contract and throw him in the AHL for a season and see how he keeps up at that level. One player that we're definitely going to get a look at there next year is Zach Funk, who is recently signed by the Washington Capitals. And I did some show prep for this on the weekend, and his Fantrax rostership was 2%. That is now doubled to a whopping 2% since he signed. So this is a left wing white, right wing player, dual winger eligibility there for Fantrax purposes, playing for the Prince George Cougars over in the Dub. He's 20 years old. He's got decent size at 6'2", 209. And he is the leading CHL goal and point scorer. And currently he is pacing for 118 points through a projected 68 games with 67 goals and 51 assists. So that's like a goal a game pace. Maybe he needs to play with Wong. So he's played his career in the WHL up before this season with Calgary Hitmen. And he was, you know, he's pretty vanilla there. His points were nothing spectacular, eye-popping. They weren't bad. They weren't great. They steadily inclined a little bit until he was traded last season to Prince George. And he's exploded as a 20-year-old. And he's playing on a line there with Riley Height and Tarek Parasak. So it's always a cautionary tale when you see a player who's 20 years old playing in the CHL, whose offensive production pops in that final season. And it seldom translates to the pro level. Look at Lucas Edmonds last season, playing for the, or 2 years ago, playing for the Kingston Frontenacs, and was a 100-point player, one of the most prolific offensive players on a good Kingston Frontenacs team. He didn't play his whole career in the CHL. He came over from Allsvenskan in Sweden and played as a 20-year-old in the CHL as a rookie, and was still draft eligible because he came from Europe. He has not translated particularly well to the American Hockey League. He had a slow transition and he's starting to get he's warming up a little bit now, but it's still not really fantasy relevant. And now he's like 22 years old. So back to Funk though, we also recently did our Dauber Prospects organizational rankings. It's not published yet. We're going to wait until the trade deadline passes before we start posting articles and releasing our rankings in case some of these guys move. But I've gone back and revisited it with and adding Zach Funk on and looking at where I think he fits in the grand scheme of things. And he makes it inside the top 15 for prospects there. And I scored him with a rank of 5 between 1 and 10. So a 10 being Connor Bedard and a 1 being you're very unlikely to ever play in the NHL. So a 5 is like a 50-50 chance. He could make it. He could play a long time but not be very effective. Or he could, you know, have a short run and then flame out. Or it might be nothing. But he ties in points with prospects like Ludwig Pearson, Ethan Frank, and Alex Suzdalev. So, you know, not blue chip prospects by any stretch, but probably, you know, players who you might own in your fantasy league or who could be gone. So there's good company there, I'm saying. And you can't ignore the goal scoring. A goal a game pace in any league is exceptional, right? You gotta give that some attention. What's your take on Funky?
Yeah, I think that at the probably add him to my ranks too, because at the bottom of that Washington Capital system, it's not great. There's definitely some guys that he probably beats out. So that's good. And like you mentioned, you know, his Funk's rate stats in the WHL this year are just ridiculous. Playing with a guy like Riley Hite is going to do that, as you mentioned. And I'm glad you brought up Suzdalev because he was playing with Connor Bedard last year. And that certainly elevated his stock. And you see what he's doing this year without him, and it's not much. So it takes a special skill to play with great players like Hite. So there's some potential there for Funk, no doubt. And, you know, I'm rooting for him, but I'm not sure that, you know, someone asked me, actually it was Elon, Kevin Carlson. He's like, hey, is this someone that we should, you know, run out and try to get? And I was like, nope, I don't think so. You know, if you're in a really deep league and you can add Zach Funk, then sure. But for a lot of modest leagues, I'm not sure. You might have better players. It kind of depends on the strength of your prospect system. But in general, I'm not super excited for him, but he might get opportunity. And, you know, in Washington, they're going to be entering a rebuild here soon. And so maybe he can be a player for them.
Right. So if you can add him now because he's signed before the NHL trade deadline, which is a lot of fantasy leagues deadline too, well, why wouldn't you, right? If you've got a prospect roster and there's no one better in your prospect pool, you're in a deep, deep league, go for it. Sign him up, add him on, see what happens. If you have to draft him, then where do you rank him in your draft? Like, what kind of round draft pick would you consider spending on Funk? If you're in, like, a 20-team league, Victor, that includes entry draft players and prospects like the guys we're talking about today, I'm assuming he's not in your first round, probably not your second round either. So not like a top 50 kind of player, but that's about where I start thinking about adding these kind of guys in a prospect draft. You know, I'm looking at like the third round pick or anything 50 or later. Is that too soon for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's just not the way that I usually like to go for players like this, because at this point, I think we kind of know more who Zach Funk is. I tend to like the players who produced higher levels earlier and are, you know, earlier in their development. So I probably wouldn't even go for him then, because I would probably go for some, you know, kid in the MHL that was producing a point per game and might not pan out, but has a higher upside. So that's generally the way I kind of look at things.
This subject comes up all the time between us, right? Because with a guy like that, I see your point, right? The ceiling is higher. There's so much more room for over the next 3 or 4 years for that potential to grow and grow and grow and turn into something very tangible, is what you're saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My I don't disagree with that, but my thought with guys like this is, well, I don't want to wait 5 years and I like tie up a prospect spot. If I have unlimited prospect opportunities on my bench, then cool, no problem. But most teams are like 25 or less, right? So with a guy like Funk, you can add him in and in short order graduate him to your roster or kick him to the curb. Try again.
Yeah, I think it just all comes down to asset management, and it really depends on the team. It depends on who you have in your pool. If you have a completely bereft prospect pool, then of course add this guy, because you'll know soon and you won't have to wait very long and he's, you know, free money. If you have, like, you know, if you have a much stronger pool and if you have some prospects that are going to mature soon, then you wouldn't want this guy because you have other probably better players that are going to be, you know, available soon. I think you just need a balance of guys that are ready soon, guys that are a year or two away, and guys that might be longer. And, you know, you kind of balance your prospect pool that way. And I generally find that the guys that are ready to produce soon are often easier to find, whereas the guys that have high upside that might be farther away are more difficult. So I'd rather get those guys and then reevaluate over the next year or two and potentially just drop them if they're nothing.
So what you're saying is we're both right. We're both pretty.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
A great point that you made there in asset management, Victor, is I think with cap leagues particularly, and people who are listening to this are in deep, deep dynasty cap leagues, you want to constantly be looking at having players who can come up and graduate onto your roster, either like break down the front door and be contributing players all season long, or if you have minor eligibility, guys you can that are on cheap contracts that you can rotate in and out of your roster when you have injuries and whatnot, cold streak, hot streak, whatever. So you do want to balance that, right? Like if you've only got three spots on your prospect pool and it's full of guys who are 3 to 4 years out that have great opportunity, you might want to look at adding a guy like one of the players we're talking about today who can maybe step in a little sooner and help you out in a pinch. Light the lamps with DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with code THPN. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
My next guy is Connor Roulette. It's a great name. Think of all the team names you could make with Roulette as part of your fantasy team name. But Connor Roulette was a 2021 fourth round pick by the Dallas Stars, but he never signed. And so that's the rub here, is that it looks like he will be available to be signed by somebody else after his rights expire. He's a 6 foot, 181 pound left wing, played three seasons for three different WHL teams. And that's part of, you know, what might be interesting or difficult here to evaluate him, because in that 2020-21 season, I was affected by COVID. He did play 11 games for the Seattle Thunderbirds. He had 12 points in those 11 games, and he played at the U18 World Junior Championships for Canada. So all that looked really good. And, you know, he's kind of bounced around the last few years. And so that might have been hard for, you know, the evaluation or the progression, but the production looks pretty good. He went from Seattle to Saskatoon Blades, Spokane Chiefs. And this season he has 90 points in 59 games. I'm not exactly sure why Dallas isn't going to sign him, because he looks pretty decent. You know, he's got, you know, decent size. Looking at his player card from Mitch Brown, his offense is in the 82nd percentile. Transition game is 76. His defense clearly seems like it's lacking. His Corsi and offensive zone retrievals look kind of poor, but overall he looks like a decent player, like someone who could contribute. In the hockey prospecting model, he's kind of trended down since having originally 13% of being a star. There's a couple of busts and a couple of average guys that he looks like RJ Umberger, Scott Lawton. So, you know, maybe there's an average, you know, NHL player there. Looking at the Fantasy Hockey Life card, some of his peripherals are kind of poor, except for his shots. His hits are really low and his blocks are okay. But the scoring upside seems decent for Connor Roulette. And based on what I read about him in the EP Ringside breakdown, he's a really smart player who always sees the ice in advance. Sounds like he's got some mobility, some skating issues, but he generally knows where to be and so can get there ahead of the play because he's so smart. So that kind of player, you know, even if he doesn't move as well, if he sees the ice well, especially as the game gets faster as you go up to the AHL and NHL, that seems like a guy that could produce. So I have some interest in Connor Roulette. If he can make it, depending on where he signed it, you know, Dallas, with being such a good team and having a strong prospect pool, probably makes sense for him to go somewhere else where he can get a little bit more opportunity and playing time. So what do you think, Pete? Are you going to spin the roulette wheel?
I am intrigued, I have to admit. I mean, Dallas does a really good job of scouting and talent identification. Just look at their last couple of drafts going back to 2019. You know, he's not big or terribly small. He's 5'11", 176, so that's a forgivable sin. I wonder if there are some concerns that he bounced around from team to team, like if there's some off-ice issues with his character. I don't know. I'm just speculating. And I'm also curious, like, just because he's not signed by Dallas doesn't mean that Dallas didn't offer him a contract. You know, it could mean that he wasn't interested in signing. He's going to play out his career in junior regardless. And, you know, he's just betting on himself that he'll get a contract offer with a different organization that he feels better about. I'm not sure why he would have a problem with Dallas. Again, I have absolutely no idea. I'm just speculating. So assuming there are no character flaws with his transient junior career and lack of interest from the Dallas Stars, yeah, this is a player I could see getting a contract. I like what I'm seeing from the charts here and the production that he's producing. I'm not really loving the star probability percentages that he's got going on the hockey prospecting chart of 0%. And he's like less than 50% probability to play in the NHL. So, you know, I'm not crazy excited for the potential, but I'd put some money down on the table for this guy. See where the ball drops.
There you go. Bet 100 on red number 5. Moving on.
All right, next up. Another player who I saw live at our last game, but we didn't talk about him at all, was Max McHugh of the London Knights. And he just signed a contract with the Columbus Blue Jackets. He signed a 3-year ELC, and he's about 1% Fantrax rostership. So this is a player who you can likely scoop up right now if you're so inclined. And who he is 21-year-old. He's 6'1", 174. And as I mentioned, he does play center for the London Knights in the OHL. He was also previously drafted, so you didn't have to wait until now for Columbus to sign him. He was drafted by Victor's San Jose Sharks in the 5th round, 156th overall back in 2021. This is his OA season in the OHL, and he's on pace, I should say, for point a game, 60 points in 62 games, 28 goals, 32 assists. So point a game pace with a nice balance between goals and assists. And a pretty high penalty minute stat of 113 minutes is what he's on pace for. He did get a suspension earlier in the season for abuse of an official after his teammate Denver Barkey was cross-checked in the face in a game against Sarnia. So I didn't see that incident, but I understand he had some words for an official. So it was verbal abuse of an official, which that's not really a red flag for me, Victor. I'm not sure if it is for you. You see your teammate have a hockey stick sandwich right into the gob, and then you're emotional about it. I think I have no problem with that, standing up for his teammates. His draft year was the COVID season. So, you know, he missed his entire draft season. He played a little bit as a rookie before that, but you know, London Knights doesn't throw a lot of ice time at 16-year-olds. So he was very limited ice time as a rookie, and then didn't play at all his draft season. So San Jose basically drafted him sort of blind off of a very small cup of coffee sample size from his rookie season, and then, you know, junior league hockey before that. And there, I guess the play there was banking on a player for the London Knights that as he matured and got older and got more ice time, it would pan out. So I'm guessing San Jose didn't see that happening fast enough and lost interest. And now that he's in his overage season as a 21-year-old, he's blossomed. He's dominating against younger, smaller guys. What he is he's a high-energy player. He's got, I think, some questionable NHL skill. I mean, he didn't really pop for me in the game I saw as being one of the more prolifically talented players on either London or Ottawa. You know, he was not bereft of skill, but it wasn't drawing and commanding my attention. He looked kind of average. And a point of game pace on London playing anywhere in the top 9 on that team, they got 9 goal scorers with more than 20 goals. So I should hope that you're producing as an overage player on that team. So I think what I'm saying here overall, Victor, is I'm at best lukewarm on Max McHugh. He's a player who I think I'm not really going to go and put him on my roster. I'm not going to make a contract offer for him in my dynasty league. Wait and see how he does at the American Hockey League with who's Columbus's farm team?
Cleveland Monsters.
Cleveland. Thank you. Old man Pete can't remember things like that so quickly anymore. So he's someone who I'm going to keep an eye on. I'll put him on my watch list, but not on my roster. What do you think about McHugh?
Yeah. He is someone that I'm not really that interested in either. I know the Sharks drafted him. I don't work for the Sharks, by the way. They just happen to be the team closest to me. So don't really care either way. But I can't remember.
I also don't hate defensemen.
I also don't remember if he was at the prospect scrimmage or not when I was watching that. But anyways, he's someone who I have watched here and there over the years, and he's never really stood out. You're right. They kind of drafted him blind that year. There wasn't a whole lot to go on, probably just based on his D-1 season. But you know, there's potential sometimes when those guys play for London and they get more opportunity and they kind of pop off, but he never really did. I mean, even this year he's just under a point per game as, you know, a 21-year-old. So you would have hoped for a little bit more. Looking at his player card, Max McHugh, it's kind of bad. His offense is only at 69%, which is for an older player in the OHL playing for a good team, you'd expect it to be much higher than that. And his defense and transition ratings are just pretty awful, frankly. So, you know, for a third or fourth year player here in the OHL, I mean, he didn't really get his first year, so this is his extra year. You'd kind of expect a little bit more from McHugh. So, yeah, let him play in the Columbus system, see what he does. Maybe he can be something, but he's not someone that I would be running out to grab.
Yeah, he wasn't going to make my preliminary list of players to talk about on this episode, but then he went ahead and signed a contract as a free agent. Well, I guess we got to talk about him now.
Yeah, it sounds like he might be a good organizational depth kind of piece. You know, maybe he's just a career AHLer, but that has some value to NHL teams. Certainly not to your fantasy team, though. All right, the next guy I'm going to talk about also got signed this week and in between our preparation, and that's Gabriel Scherzer. I don't even know. I'm having a hard time saying it. It's S-Z-T-U-R-C, but it's like Scherzer. That's basically how you say it. All right. Anyways, he was signed by Tampa in the time before this past week. So he is a 5'11", 176-pound center, might be a winger. And he kind of had an interesting trajectory. He played in Czechia when he's Czech. And he played there when he was first coming up. And then he came over to the WHL in 2021-22. Again, this is someone who was not drafted. And then he's been in the WHL the past three seasons. He was over point per game last season in his second year, 79 and 56. This season, he's over again with 68 and 54, and he's the captain of the Kelowna Rockets. He liked to see the guys with the leadership, with the letter on the sweater. That's all really good. And his player card from Mitch Brown looks overall pretty decent defensively. Is the lowest number at 64, but his offense and transition overall look pretty good. And his expected goals and assists are all pretty strong, and primary point involvement all really good. The hockey prospecting card doesn't look so good for Scherzer's. He looks more like a 2% chance of being a star, but he's kind of trending up the last couple of seasons. He looks like a bunch of average players, guys like Burakovsky, Frolik, Trent Frederick, and Nick Waugh is someone he looks a fair amount alike, who obviously is having some relevance now. So it's possible, you know, that Scherzer could do something interesting. His Fantasy Hockey Life player card actually looks really strong. His peripheral floor is going to be really high. He's someone who hits and he actually blocks a ton for a forward. So you really like that. The bash is going to give him a high floor as long as he gets enough playing time. And did I say who signed him? He was signed by the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think that that's a really important part of the equation here, because we know that that system in Tampa is not good. They have not so many good prospects. So Scherzer looks like he could be a player for them. And we've seen players come basically sign and get opportunity relatively quickly. And he's not terribly undersized, but 5'10", 176. So, you know, a little bit maybe on the smaller side, but he hits, you know, he plays physical. So I think that he plays a little bit bigger than his size. So, you know, he's someone who could find his way into some playing time. And, you know, I think you got to love that opportunity for someone in the Tampa system. So to me, the fact that he signed there makes him a lot more interesting really quickly, as opposed to signing somewhere where there wasn't as much opportunity. So what about you, Pete? Do you have interest in this player? And you have to say his name first before you can give your reaction.
His last name is I'd like to buy a vowel, please. S-Z-T-U-R-C, Sturz.
Not going to work here anymore anyway.
I do have interest in this player. And so Tampa Bay has a pretty good track record of identifying free agents. I mean, they have been the poster boy for this episode's topic, where they do a tremendous job of signing overage NCAA, CHL, or European prospects that are particularly CHL players, I would say, that are, you know, undersized, like Braden Point, Tyler Johnson, Yanni Gord. There's been a long list of them. So I'm not sure if they've still got the same scouting staff that have been doing all this identification of prospects, if it's the same group. I don't pay that much attention to NHL front office staffing. And we're going back a few years with some of the names that I just dropped. But if it's the same old boys going to the ranks, finding these guys, then they might have found another one with Gabriel. I'd like to buy a Val, please.
All right, I'd like to solve the puzzle.
I love the fact that Tampa Bay's prospect pool is so devoid, and they have very few draft picks as well. Like, they don't pick until, I think, the third round, maybe, and they have a couple fifth and seventh round picks coming up in this draft. Like, they have no draft picks. So they've traded away almost all of their relevant picks and prospects to go for it right now. And, you know, I commend them on that. I think that's good asset management, and it's paid off well for them. And they've been a bit of a dynasty team for the last couple of years here. But what it does is it opens up opportunities for guys like I'd like to buy a Val. And his competition for a roster spot there is going to be softer than it is in other organizations. And Tampa Bay will be more desperate for players. And he plays the kind of style that they like, right? He plays a physical, gritty game. They've gone out and got guys like Tanner Jeannot lately to play that role, and Nick Paul. And so this is another one of those guys. He might lack the big size, but that doesn't really cause too much cause for concern with Tampa. That's, they're acceptable of that as long as he can play. They don't mind if you're 5'9 or 5'10, whatever he is. But yeah, I think he's a relevant prospect here. All right, my last guy, if we're moving on, I'm going to Europe for this one. And the player that's been getting some chatter around the campfire as a European free agent, and right now he's playing in the KHL, and this is Maxim Siplikov. And if you want to look him up for Fantrax, he's got 2% Fantrax rostership, so he's pretty available. His last name is spelt T-S-Y-P-L-A-K-O-V. At least he's got a couple of vowels in there. And he's a little bit older than the rest of the guys we've been talking about, though. He's 25 years old, and he's playing with Spartak, and they're in the playoffs right now. As of the weekend, I think he had a couple of games under his belt there. So depending on when their playoff run ends, that's when you can expect the rumor mill to start kicking up about where and when, if ever, he is going to sign an NHL contract and come over. So he could be playing in the NHL before this season ends. And if he signs before your trade deadline comes up, this might be a player you might even be able to squeeze into your roster and have for the final stretch there. What he is he's a big guy. He's 6'3", 109. And through 63 games in the KHL this season, he had 31 goals and 47 points. So a little low on the assist column. For those that struggle with math, the difference is 16. So 31 goals, though, in the KHL is pretty significant. That's noteworthy. And that should be translatable over here in the NHL. He's got a good shot, and he's got good size. And that combination makes him an attractive option. And at 25 years old, he's NHL ready now. There's no development period here or incubation period. If he comes over, if he doesn't stick in the NHL right away, so it's now or never. So the turnaround time is really short. So he's I wouldn't say a boomer or a bust player. I'm not saying that this is going to be an Artemi Panarin kind of upside kind of guy, but he's someone who I think could have, you know, Thomas Holmstrom kind of value in your league, playing in the middle six somewhere on your roster. And if everything breaks right, you'll get some peripheral stats out of him as well. Could be a 20 goal scorer in the NHL. And if you're lucky, he finds himself on power play one in front of the net, just, you know, causing havoc for the goalie and the defense and looking for the greasy goals, tips and rebounds. Any interest in this guy if he signs, Victor?
Yeah, definitely. I think that he's definitely an interesting player. I do like these players more that are playing professionally and have, you know, more of that experience beating professional goalies, and they're generally a little bit more mature and the wait time is zero. So at this point, I agree with you that, you know, I like the wait time being nothing. The issue with some of these guys is the, you know, what is the upside? You know, you look at, he's, like you said, he's 25, and you know, that's kind of like where most players hit their prime. And if you look back to his like draft eligible seasons, he didn't really do much. He wasn't really doing much. even until last season, where he basically had half the amount of production that he does now, and he basically doubled that in 1 year, which is always a bit of a red flag. It's more of a red flag for me when they play for all-star teams like SKA or CSK, which is not the case here. He's playing for Spartak. They're not as good of a team. And his production is really strong. So you like to see that. I was just looking at him compared to one of the recent free agents who came over, Dmitry Voronkov. And they aren't necessarily like exactly similar, but they're both bigger dudes that don't move super well. Voronkov is a lot heavier than Siplikov, who's 190 pounds. Voronkov is 240 pounds, but they have similar height and they had similar concerns about them not moving around so well. I think that's one of the other concerns with Siplikov, but he's really smart. He has a good shot and he reads the play well. He just doesn't move very quickly. So he's going to also need to be in the right situation. But if the right team drafts him and gives him the opportunity, I mean, you love what Columbus did. They signed him. They gave him the opportunity playing with countrymen and Russian countrymen. And that line has been great, you know, for a disappointing Columbus team. But maybe, you know, I think that there could be something there with Siplikov. And I'm more interested in him than a lot of these other players on this list, Pete.
Yeah, I haven't seen any tape of him playing, and I've certainly never seen him live. But I'm from what I'm reading about him, I'm getting Igor Sokolov vibes. And I'm really familiar with Sokolov playing for the Belleville Senators because I see them play regularly. Sokolov is a great AHL player. He's bigger and he's got an amazing shot and pretty decent hockey sense and playmaking abilities. His puck skills are great. But this conditioning was a factor for him when he was younger. And his mobility is still, I think, the biggest factor. So I think Sokolov is kind of stuck at the American Hockey League level. I'm not really anticipating him transitioning into the NHL. So I have similar concerns about Siplikov. But, I mean, hey, if they get eliminated tonight and then tomorrow he says, I've signed a contract with the New York Rangers, then we'll find out right away, or maybe in a couple of days when he gets over the jet lag, how he's able... maybe the Rangers is a bad example too. He might have a hard time cracking that roster. Let's say the San Jose Sharks. Anyone can play for the Sharks. Then we'll know. We'll know right away if he's any good. And even if he's not a prolific goal scorer, he can give you the peripherals, then that's something too, right?
So some interest there with Siplikov. The last guy I wanted to bring up is Cooper Black, and he is a goalie. And I know we're putting our necks out there talking about goalies, but this one is definitely one who's going to have interest. Mainly, you don't really need to know anything else other than he's 6'9", and that's going to give you lots of opportunity when you're that big. He's now 22. He was really young for his draft class, being a June 14th birth date, and so, you know, that may be part of it. He was also playing in the NAHL, which is hard to get drafted out of, and then he went to the BCHL, and he was pretty good there for the Nanaimo Clippers. Then last year he went to Dartmouth, didn't have the best season, but this year he's been much better. He went from an 899 to a 909 and dropped his goals against by almost half a goal. So that's good. The other thing I would say about Cooper Black is that last year his goal save above expected was not so great, but this year he's really turned that around and he's saving well above expected for a not so great Dartmouth team. And has a lot of ties, and so that helps him have a winning record, whereas last year he only won 5 games, this year 11. So that's a pretty important stat for a goalie, you know. And I think the other thing, the scouting reports I've read about Cooper Black is that, yes, he's big, but he's also a little bit slow. You don't have to be super quick though when you're 6'9" and your legs reach all the way across the crease, so that's a little bit helpful for him, and that he reads the play really well. So if you're not super fast but you can read the play well and you're long, then you can probably at least be a backup in the NHL. So, and these college goalies that sign, they tend to have very little wait time, so they could be in the AHL and be in the NHL soon after that, a year or two. The fact that he's 22 is helpful. So definitely someone of interest. He may not be the most skilled technical goalie, but Cooper Black with that height and package is going to get some looks, I would imagine. Any thoughts on Cooper Black, Pete?
Well, you stick your neck out there, not me. I don't fancy myself to be a goalie scout of any quality at all. I've seen goalies and I thought they're great, and I've added them in my dynasty leagues, and they're East Coast League players at best. Dryden McKay, I'm looking right at you, buddy.
Yeah, he had everybody fold.
Yeah, well, not everybody. No, Chris Peters was not a believer.
Okay. Chris is a smart guy. He had most people.
Fold. Most people, yeah.
Anyways, before we end, I wanted to do a brief check-in on our listener league. And thanks to everyone who was playing in our listener league. And we try not to talk about it too much because I know that not everybody does, but we figured we could do a brief check-in on how everybody did. Pete was just asking me, am I done? Am I out? Well, the way we do it is that we actually do brackets for all of the, both the championship and seventh overall and first overall. So both Pete and Evan in their respective leagues are in that middle bracket. Pete finished 11th and Evan 12th. So they have a chance to win the seventh overall pick, and the lowest teams get a bye. So they're in that middle semifinal bracket to get seventh overall. So, you know, seventh overall, you can get a pretty good player there this year.
I feel like I'm in the relegation league here.
Well, there's no relegation. So you're not going to get relegated, but you're not going for the championship.
That's what it feels like, right, Evan? I feel like we're fighting to stave off relegation.
Too many injuries this year for me.
I'm going to call it what it is. Too many bad draft picks for me, man. If I would have drafted better, I'd be playing better.
Yeah, I had some guys go down early, but no, it wasn't my best showing that I hoped for. But well, you can come back next year. I'm building through the draft.
There you go. Retool and come back at it next year. In case you all are wondering, I finished first in my league and had a first round bye. So
we weren't wondering.
Well, someone has to bring credibility to the show.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I know no one was wondering, but I'm going to tell you anyways.
Congratulations.
It's kind of weird sitting back that first week, 2 weeks, and watching everyone else play and then like, oh, I have to set my lineup again. But we'll see.
Real world problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyways, thanks everyone for playing along, and we'll see how it goes. Good luck, everyone who isn't playing against me in the finals. That would be the Sod captain. Don't remember who that GM is, but it's been good times.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the draft. Seventh overall pick. All right, well, let's wrap up this report. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Dauber Prospects Report number 48. If you enjoyed the show and you want to reach out and chat with us, or you have suggestions for other shows or just feedback in general, you can reach us on X at @DPR_show, Dauber Prospects Report, at Farling, PHARLING, at Sabarin 91, and at Victor Nuno 12. Don't forget to follow HockeyPod.net as well. Lots of great shows there. Obviously, you'll have excellent taste in hockey podcasts if you're listening to this. And if you are, please, you know, go ahead and subscribe wherever you're listening. Give us a 5-star review. Share an episode on Twitter if you want. Good way to get us to follow you back, of course. It helps share the show and spread the word and keep us making new episodes. If you have a show you want to hear about, let us know. But until then, that's it for this report. Keep your stick on the ice.
What would you say you do here?
Let's do that hockey.